Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
And Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 24th day of September 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will join us, too, to take a look at the cash grain market and conditions on the ground around his farm near Windsor, Illinois. He's with Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds. Along the way, we'll check in with Gary Schnitke. He's taking a look at a survey of the professional farm managers in the state. They expect that cash rents will come down for the 2016 season. We'll hear by how much with Gary. And as we close out our half hour together, we'll take another look at El Nino and the impact on commodities across the planet. That with Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. December corn was down a penny and three quarters today at 381.5. The March at 392.75, two lower. May down two at $4. July at 405.5, two and a quarter lower. December down two and three quarters at 404.5. Soy complex November beans up four and a quarter at $8.68. The January at 872.5, up four and a quarter. And the March up four and a quarter as well. $8.76.75. May at 879.5. Up four, July 4.5 higher at 884.25. Next year's November at $8.75.5, up 5.5 cents. Bean meal futures down 70 cents at 302.40, and the bean oil up 65 at 26.98. Soft red winter wheat down 10.25 cents, $4.97.25 in the December. The final trade, July, the harvest month, 10.75 lower. At $5.12. December hard red at $4.90, down 11.75, and July futures there down 11.5 at $5.23.5. Live cattle futures finished the October at $133.50, up 27.5 cents. The October feeders at $184.50 are up $2.12.5, and lean hogs in the October $71.25. They finished 70 cents higher for the afternoon for 100 pounds. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, public radio for the farming world. Find us online, as always, at WILLAG.org. You can always hear our programming on demand.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
A quick look at the energy market shows crude oil about 54 cents higher at $45.03 a barrel at this hour. Ethanol futures trading down 2.8 cents of a cent at $1.50.07 per gallon. And the October gasoline, the RBOB, the wholesale price for a gallon, at $1.36.07. Gasoline down a penny and 4 cents today. Heating oil or diesel fuel up 2.1 cents of a cent at $1.52.07. And natural gas at $2.58.04. That's a penny and a half higher on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is 67 points lower. That's trading at 16,120. And the U.S. dollar is down 0.051 at 96.15. The gold futures currently trading at $1,152.50 per troy ounce. They're up $20.90. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies and 84. Beautiful day outside. Tonight, clear. A low of 55. Northeast winds at 6 miles an hour. Tomorrow, on Friday, sunny skies and 82. Again, an east-northeast wind at 5 to 11, gusting to 15. That'll dry things out nicely if it's not already done so. Friday night, mostly clear at a low of 56. And Saturday, sunny and 78 degrees. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and 58. Sunday, partly sunny and 78. Partly cloudy on Sunday evening and 60. Monday, sunny skies to start the work week and 83 degrees. Tuesday, sunny and 82. And Wednesday, sunny and 80. Fantastic time to be harvesting crops in the Midwest.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, the 24th day of September. On the phone line with us is Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting, not in Waco, Texas today. He's in the northwestern part of Illinois, back up on the home farm, I take it. Dan, how are you today?
Doing fine.
Well, tell me about conditions on the ground. I suppose you've gotten around in parts of that northwestern part of Illinois. You're just where? Below Moline someplace?
Yeah, I'm below Moline, about 10, 15 miles right across the line from Rock Island County into Mercer County. So I'm a northern Mercer County resident. And combines are moving, both corn and soybeans, but it's not full tilt yet. You do have to drive around a little bit, but there's a few starting to move. I suspect it'll be full blast here, you know, in another week or two. But I think guys are just kind of getting started, at least in this area. And that's kind of common. We're, as a rule, a week or two behind Central Illinois, where I imagine Central Illinois is just full throttle probably at the moment. But that's the way it is when you get up here in this Quad City area.
So tell me a little bit about the low prices we're suffering through, both at the futures and the cash market, and what producers ought to do. And you want to start with soybeans for me today?
Well, I mean, soybeans are, we've known for some time if we grew a big crop, our carryover numbers were going to swell to some pretty lofty levels. And then when you take into account that we have that South America still has some inventory to sell yet, they're winding that down. But they do have, Argentina has some inventory that could move into the world market. But when you take a look at today's export sales, very positive. We did get another unknown sale announcement here today. And we do have the Chinese delegation prancing around the United States, and they're expected to, you know, at least sign some agreements to buy additional soybeans, which is generally supportive to the soybean market, and I think that explains why soybeans were able to close higher here today. Not by much, but it was enough anyway for a higher close. When you look at the soybean chart, it's basically in a sideways trading range for 4 or 5 weeks in here. You know, I would like to think or visualize that we could break to the upside on that, but I don't. I can't visualize any fundamentals at the moment that would do that, because at least the early yield reports that I'm hearing, the beans seem to be coming in a lot better than maybe what farmers were thinking initially. They're still well below last year's levels, but are turning out today to be a little better. But we're just scratching yet. We don't know where this crop is going to be headed. But so far, so good. I haven't heard very many farmers complain to me about their yields. Yes, they are down, but not probably as dramatic as they thought. And I think that's going to, in this bias south, is going to just kind of keep a lid on this market to have anything at least meaningful that would move the needle to the upside. You never know about USDA's reports. You know, we got one here at the end of the month, which will give us September 1 stocks number. As a rule, those are usually build into the market, and they give you a reason why the market performed the way it did prior to the report rather than what's going to happen down the road. The October report's going to be the biggie. Basically the biggie there is going to be harvested acres and how USDA handles that harvested acres and how they handle the yield, because I guess it's don't know what's going to happen, you know, on a 160-acre field. If You got 15 acres of ground in that that doesn't have anything on it. How do you handle that? Do you count that as unharvested, or do you just average that in with the 160? And that's where USDA is going to have some problems, I think, coming up with the yield as well as harvested acres. And we may not really know the size of this crop until we get halfway through the marketing season next year. We get into that March report. Then we can, you know, kind of backpedal, and then we can kind of find out actually what we get raised, because there is a lot of, I think, a lot of unharvested acres that could be counted as harvested, but those are zero yields blended in with some high end yields. So we'll see how that goes. As far as marketing strategies go, I mean, seasonally, we should begin to see some strength. I guess I would be patient enough to maybe see if we could get some seasonal strength in year, at least during the first half of October. And if we did get some, then I would kind of evaluate, you know, where I wanted to be on my sales level.
And so we know that from the USDA numbers, most producers for both corn and soybeans, or many of them, will pull across the scale and simply sell. That's not always the best of deals. That's happened to be really good a few years in recent years. This year's not probably one of them. However, I'm not certain that there's a lot of upside potential left in either of those markets over the near term. Do you have suggestions for them?
Well, I think there's reason, at least when I look at my long-term cycles and even some of my intermediate cycles, there's reason to believe that there is upside price potential somewhere here down the road. Whether that kicks in December, next April, next June, next July, don't know. I mean, South America could get into some real serious weather problems, and we could have a good winter rally unexpectedly. So I do think if farmers do part with their inventory across the scales for one reason or the other, for cash flow, don't have enough storage, don't want to invest in any storage, I think there's reasons that he should take a look at purchasing some call options to at least be in position to capture any of those surprise rallies that may come at us, for reasons that we don't really know yet. And there's enough things that's going on around this world that we just don't know what we're going to wake up to the next morning. So I would encourage upside potential positions with a call option of some kind. For those that do have personal storage and want to store it for higher prices, they got more options. I don't think things are bearish enough to have to buy a put, but there's no doubt that there's some downside price potential in soybeans if this crop turns out to be as lofty as what USDA has been projecting. I mean, we could easily slide 75 cents on beans pretty easy. And then if beans go down 25 cents, that means corn could slide down, you know, 30 or 40. So there's still risk in this market until we get further down the road, I guess, in harvest and find out where it's all going to go.
Just this quick note from the Iowa Soybean Association. They are confirming that there was a sale, of course, made today, a contract signed. It's for the largest number of soybeans ever sold by the United States in one contract, both in terms of dollar amount and in terms of bushels. That amount is what? $5.3 billion worth of soybeans, 484 million bushels. The second largest was in 2012 at 317 million bushels. So this was a pretty good sale. I guess that'll help support the market for soybeans once we start trading in tonight, I would think.
Well, I think so. I mean, but I think if you look into the fine print of some of those contracts, they're probably not as solid a contract as you think. A lot of it is intentions, and what your grain companies will do is they'll report that as a sale, as an intention, and then maybe when it gets in, you know, a few years back here, if you remember during the December, we had a whole bunch of sales cancellations starting coming out of every place. And basically what it was the exporters had basically registered with the USDA that they were going to sell XYZ to China. Then all of a sudden the calendar year ran out, and then we started seeing a bunch of cancellations. So a lot of those contracts have a lot of loopholes in them. So, but, you know, what we hear today is definitely a positive situation for at least soybean demand. We're going to need a lot more of those sales based upon the carryover projections, and then, of course, based upon what happens in South America this winter.
Thanks so much. Have a good time there on the home farm.
Very good. Thank you.
That is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting. Comes to us out of the northwestern part of Illinois today. In today's agricultural news, Citigroup has reportedly issued a warning to commodity investors to brace for more losses. A team led by Ed Morse, global head of commodities research at Citigroup, says excess supplies and a sluggish world economy likely translate into further losses for commodities. Specifically, wheat tops the list, along with cocoa, crude oil, and metals. Raw materials and commodities are at a 16-year low, and Citigroup's outlook projects more of the same for the next 3 to 6 months. China's slowest expansion in decades is cutting demand, just as farmers, miners, and oil drillers expand supplies, encouraged by prices that were at record highs in 2008. The Bloomberg Commodity Index, a measure of returns for the 22 components, has tumbled 15% since June 30th, heading for the worst quarter since the end of 2008. Well, a federal judge last week ruled the class action lawsuit against Syngenta can advance to trial. A federal district judge in Kansas City, Kansas, made the ruling allowing the lawsuit filed on behalf of farmers, grain handlers, and exporters to proceed. The class action lawsuit alleges that China's rejection of U.S. corn with Viptera's MIR 162 trait led to an interruption in trade with China and affected commodity prices. The lawsuit claims the trade disruption led to economic damage between $1 billion and $3 billion. China at the time had not approved the trait that was found in the exported corn. And finally, this story on tar spot. Well, a new fungal disease of corn has been spotted in both Indiana and Illinois. The University of Illinois has confirmed the disease was found in 3 northern Illinois counties. Samples of tar spot were collected from commercial fields by Monsanto breeders and pathologists and sent to Purdue University in response to an inquiry for samples and distribution information of the tar spot pathogen. Purdue researchers identified the pathogen, which is new to the United States, almost 2 weeks ago and submitted confirmation samples to USDA. Prior to the Indiana finding, tar spot was known to occur only in cool, humid areas at high elevations in Latin America. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming and our calendar of events. If you roll forward far enough, you'll see that on the 24th day of November, that's the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, we have again scheduled our Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. I'll tell you more about that over the coming weeks, but get ready because this is a great event, and it's going to be a fantastic event this year. The Farm Assets Conference is in November. Our All Day Ag Outlook is in March. Both are going to happen, and they're going to be really fantastic events this year. Looking forward to having those and to having you with us at one or both of them. More information will be coming. You can always check it out in our schedule of events, the calendar at the willag.org website. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Cash rents on professionally managed farmland are set to decrease next year. That's the conclusion of a survey in the state of Illinois. Each year, the Illinois Society of Professional Farm Managers and Rural Appraisers ask its members how much, on average, they're collecting for cash rent for the current year and their expectations for the next year. The survey provides a really good indicator of rents on professionally managed farmland, says Gary Schnittke from the University of Illinois.
We looked at that, and for excellent quality farmland, which is 190-plus bushels per acre, the farm managers said that rents in 2016 would be $318 an acre, which is down $32 from the 2015 rent.
Schnittke helps to develop the survey and tally the results. Those can be found on the FarmDoc Daily website, categorized for farms with corn yields less than 150 bushels to the acre to those over 190. The move to lower cash rents is needed and doesn't surprise Schnittke.
Farm managers' rents tend to react more quickly to returns in operator and land returns. So they come down and go up faster than the average cash rent. So I'm not surprised that they're coming down. I would note that the amount they're coming down, or the level of cash rent that they say they will be charging for 2016, probably won't leave the farmer any return, because the operator and land returns are still below the average cash rent that farm managers say they're charging.
The first year the Illinois Society collected rents on professionally managed farmland was in 2007. The average was $183 an acre back then, and $17 higher than the overall statewide average. The professional farm manager's cash rent peaked at $396 an acre in 2013. This would be the third year in a row they've dropped cash rents, if it happens. But that trend doesn't actually translate to the state as a whole. Last year was the first year statewide cash rents in Illinois decreased. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's check out what's been happening on the farm with Matt Bennett. He's at Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Matt, thanks for being with us. I know you're probably in the field this afternoon. How did the beans, did you get them finished yet, by the way?
You know, we're done with most of our beans. We only had maybe a good day left of bean cutting. We had a lot of beans that we're able to cut here in the last 10 days or so. So we got along really well, and we're pushing along. We're not quite half done with corn, but we're getting close.
And so you're moving. So you will wrap up really quick. What's your expectation then for getting done?
Probably, you know, if we have another 10 days of good weather, I'm assuming we'll be done pretty easily, but you never know. It would break down and whatnot.
Always can be. How was the corn?
Corn is good. I mean, it's not like last year, but it's good. I mean, we've been in a lot of corn that is right in that 200 area. We had a lot of corn last year, you know, that was probably 40 to 50 bushel better than that. We're picking some corn today that's probably the best corn we picked so far. And so I don't know what it'll end up at, but it's running in that 215, 220 range probably. So, you know, it's all good. I just don't think it's quite as good as what it was last year. So.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for the update. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Cherries Jubilee Day. The dessert that today is made with cherries, liquor, and vanilla ice cream was first served at one of Queen Victoria's Jubilee celebrations. The Queen was reportedly partial to cherries. The original dish, though, didn't contain ice cream, but was meant to accompany venison, especially red deer or roebuck. On this day in agricultural history in 1870, George Claude was born. A French engineer, he invented the neon light. He first displayed the new light on December 10th of 1910 in Paris. The first U.S. firm to take advantage of the neon sign was a Packard car dealership in Los Angeles. In 1911, Earl Ovington became the first airmail pilot. His first load included 640 letters and 1,280 postcards, all tucked on the plane floor between his legs. In 1920, Mickey Rooney was born, one of our favorite Rooney roles as Shockey Carter in Hoosier Schoolboy. In the film, Mickey plays a farm boy who sticks by his alcoholic father and is helped by a teacher in getting his dad a job driving a milk truck. And in 1923, Nancy Green died. She was hired to represent and demonstrate Aunt Jemima Pancake Mix. At the 1893 Columbian Exposition in Chicago, the exhibit was so popular that police had to control the crowds at the Aunt Jemima booth. Fair officials awarded her a medal and proclaimed her Pancake Queen. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's the 24th day of September. Mike Tenor of T-Storm Weather is here to look at the forecast across the planet, and I think maybe we should stay with the planet. El Nino is really strong, and it's been having an effect just a little bit of everywhere. What do you see?
Well, it looks like we're starting to see the effects of it across a large area of the world. Whether or not that's simply coincidence or part of El Nino will be a debatable story for a while, because typically we don't see big impacts until a little bit later in the year, starting around the middle to end of November and then continuing through February. That said, right now we are seeing the type of weather that we would expect during the winter. And the main thing for the U.S. at the moment is that we're remaining unseasonably mild. September will end up as one of the 10 warmest on record across the Corn Belt. These records go back to 1895, and it looks like we'll end up around the number 3, 4, or 5 warmest September in that period. So this is a big record to be getting close to. We think that this type of temperature regime will continue all the way through the winter. We won't see highs in the 70s and 80s in the winter, but we will see high temperatures around 5 to 10 degrees above normal over many of the next few months, the way it looks now. But that's not the only area that we're watching. If you look into Australia, this is a country that typically ends up with a drought when you have an El Nino. Over the last several months, it really has not been all that dry. We've seen some decent rainfall in the wheat belt. But if you look at what's happened just over the last 3 weeks, and then combine that with the forecast for the next couple of weeks, we can see that there's not much rain that's happened or going to happen. And because of that, we are starting to become a little bit concerned with the wheat situation in Australia. Now, keep in mind, we have seen some rainfall leading into right now, and that is a bit important. In order to have a really bad wheat crop, we've seen that you typically need to have a drought lasting into the beginning of the growing season and then continuing straight on through into harvest. If we turn dry right now and we don't see a whole lot of rain, that won't be a great situation. But we will have seen rain earlier in the growing season, so that may tend to limit your yield losses there. But either way, you want it to rain in Australia. There's not a whole lot on the way. The one other area that we're watching always is Argentina and into Brazil, these key areas of South America. We've seen a lot of rain at times over the last 1 to 2 months in both countries, and it looks like that's going to continue in the corn, soybean, and wheat region. For this week, we're looking for good rains leading into the beginning of October across Brazil. Starting in about a week, it looks like that'll shift further to the south into Argentina. And again, these are areas that typically are wet when you have a strong El Nino. So we have three regions, we have three typical impacts, and we think that more than likely this is all because of the strong El Nino and that these types of temperature and rainfall situations will continue over the next several months and really into the spring.
Mike, we thank you so much for keeping track of El Nino for us and the impact it's having across the planet. We'll talk with you more about it when we discuss this again next week.
That sounds great, Todd. You have a great afternoon.
That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather.